You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Monday, March 9th, episode 3900, brought to you by Worm Flooring. Good morning, horse people.
Well, hello, everybody. Today, we're going to have... I'm so excited about this. I got to see... Jennifer and I got to see the Kelpies, those great big metal horses in Scotland that we've all seen pictures of. We got to see... We drove by them. We didn't stop in. We were on a bus tour, but we got to drive by them while we were in Scotland. Well, the sculptor is going to be on today, Andy Scott, who built
this
those
is so
things.
Cool.
I know. Isn't that cool? He's also done some other amazing horses, and they're all very, very, very large. And we're going to talk to him today about it. Ashley is going to stop by. She's chatting with you about something she wants you to help with. And we're going to do a study show. And Jamie and I are going to answer, we're not answer, we're going to put our two cents in on a question that was posed in the auditor room. We'll do that at the end of the show. Plus, in the auditor post show, for all of you that are on TikTok and Instagram, unlike Jamie, we're going to play the who is more likely to game. And anybody that's on TikTok or Instagram will know exactly what that is. So we'll do that in the post show. And you'll learn what it is then.
Can't wait.
All right. So let's talk about this a little bit because we've made a decision what we're going to do. It's episode 3900, which means episode 4000 is coming up. And it's going to happen on July the 27th of 2026. So July 27th is a Monday, and that's when episode 4000 is going to be. We had initially talked about maybe traveling and meeting and doing a meetup and everything. The reason that we kind of went away from that, one, is budget. Two is that only then people in that immediate area can participate. So what we thought instead is that we'll probably do this in an evening so more people can play along. We're going to do a Zoom call that anybody that wants to from all over the world can join in on. So we'll do a live Zoom call. That'll actually be the 4,000th episode. We're going to arrange to talk to six or seven of you. So listeners will be the only guests that day. But you can all join us. You can all see us. It'll be on video. And everybody can participate that way. You can have your chat room going during the show. I think this is what you and I talked about it. This is how we agreed that the most people could participate, right?
Yeah, so episode 3,000. You drove to my house and you were like, are you going to drive to my house for 4,000? And I said, hell to the no. So
we talked about doing it in Lexington, but again, we'll have 20 people there, you know, where we can have 100 on the Zoom call. So,
yeah. So this is going to be fun. So what probably we'll record it Sunday night, the 26th.
Yeah,
maybe?
That's what I'm thinking. More people would be free, I think, on a Sunday night than any other night. Right.
Yeah. For sure.
So we'll let you know more details and we'll give you all the links and everything about that. But I wanted to let you know because some of you wanted to participate and that's how we'll do it. Our best out to people just north of you in Oklahoma, but also Michigan got hit by tornadoes, bad tornadoes over the weekend. And, you know, that's the closest Jennifer and I ever came to a tornado was in Michigan while we were on the road show. And apparently there's more storms planned for you tomorrow. So keep your head down.
Yeah, I was looking at the weather because it's supposed to be 86 degrees today. And I was like, oh my gosh.
We didn't have spring,
crazy.
Did we? We went from winter to summer. There was no spring.
Well, we didn't even have winter. You guys were colder than we were. We had one snow and then it was like, okay, we're done. January 24th, we're done. So it's been crazy. Like the grass is growing. The bugs are out.
The biting flies are out here.
Yeah. So it was crazy. So I was like, well, I guess I'll just check the weather, see what's going to happen. And all I saw for tomorrow was like a lightning bolt on the little day to day. And I was like, that doesn't look good.
Well, Reed Timmer, the tornado chaser dude with that tank he chases tornadoes in, he posted this morning that he had a picture of basically your house. And he said he's going to Oklahoma tomorrow. So
no.
You don't want Reed coming to your neighborhood.
No,
just like you don't want that Weather Channel dude. What's his name?
I don't want to see. Yeah. I mean, we hate it. We were watching the storm tracker. So we watched Channel 9 and we watched the storm trackers and we're like, oh my God, he said driveway. This happened multiple times. And I'm like, that's not ever good. No, you don't ever want them around you.
All right, let's do some daily winnies.
From the podcast to the barn, here's some hidden birthday wishes to keep you warm. Hope it lasts all year long. Happy birthday, friends.
Well, happy birthday to Joanne Strauss. It's her birthday. She's one of our terrific auditors. And also a congratulations to longtime auditor and friend Robin Donaghy on her marriage to Chris Holden. They got married over the weekend at the farm, apparently. And she said, yes, there were Winnies in the background. So that sounds perfect. We're looking forward to seeing you and meeting Chris, and her kids always come along. They'll be on the cruise, and believe it or not, the cruise is 2 months away. So we're going to look forward to seeing you guys there.
I had a what should have been a very productive weekend. It was beautiful here. I have horses to ride, horses to take care of. Everything is lovely. But I had an injury on Friday night.
Uh-oh.
Glenn. Like, kind of like a crippling, I think it was Saturday morning, actually, kind of a crippling injury. And it has just ruined my entire weekend.
Uh-oh.
And then I went out and got injured again yesterday. And I'm like, what is happening? So yesterday I went to get a brow wax. Hello. I got a pedicure and a brow wax, and she freaking burned me with the wax.
That's the underside thing?
Yes, it's an all girls know. Like, when they take that wax stick, they're supposed to dip it in and then blow on it and then put it on your face. She didn't blow on it. And she put it on and then just ripped my skin off. So I have this like scab scar under my eyebrow. I'm lucky to be alive from
so
that.
So they actually, I don't know anything about this. So they actually put the wax right on your eyebrows and they pull it
what
off?
Are you new? So yeah, they
I didn't know anybody like did anything vat. With their eyebrows.
They have a vat of wax and they put the stick in it and then they like trace under your eye where they're going to rip
I
your face off.
I don't want wax anywhere near my eyeballs.
Yeah, it sucks. Keep your eyes closed because your eyelashes get stuck in it. Don't do that. So they put this thing on it, and it's
I've
usually
heard about
this
the
nice
thread thing, but I never knew about this.
Yeah, no, it's a whole thing. Like, I don't have patience for threading. I just want to get it over with. I'm like, here's time for torture. Let's do it. And so I go in, I get it done. And usually they like rip the wax off and then they put their cold hands on where they just like, oh, okay, you okay? You know, like, nope. She just smeared the hot wax on, ripped it off, went right to the next. It was like the most aggressive waxing I've ever had. Okay. But previous to that, Chad came in on Saturday morning. And I'm sitting on the couch and I have a paper towel to my left that is soaked in blood. And there's a paper towel on the coffee table that is soaked in blood. And then I've got like a paper towel over my finger that is just soaked in blood. And he's like, oh my God, what happened? What happened? My God, you're bleeding. And I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. He's like, no, what happened? Like, there's blood everywhere. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. Tell me why you're bleeding. You're bleeding. I don't want to talk about it. And he's like, listen, I will not laugh at you. I will not be upset. Just please tell me why you're bleeding so bad. Okay. So I was trying to open the yogurt container. And I cut my finger opening a yogurt container and lost like a pint of blood. Who
Aren't
does
they
that?
Plastic?
Yeah, you know, like the big yogurt container, yeah, where you're trying to like, you slide your fingers around and pull the top off, but there's like foil underneath it.
Yeah.
Well, that little lip where you like grab it and pull it off was right there. And I sliced my finger on the foil part of the yogurt lid. And so he thinks that I've like sliced my finger off. And I'm like, well, I was opening the yogurt container and he literally steps back, points at me, and he's like, ha, 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 oh my God, you cut your finger opening yogurt? You were opening yogurt and you're bleeding up. And I'm like, I don't want to, that's why I didn't want to talk about it. But when you slice it,
spouses find the other person getting hurt just hilarious for some reason.
Do you know how bad it hurts happening. And it's my birdie finger. So I'm like, this finger hurts, mother. This one. Hold it straight up at him. And it's like, and it's really crippling when you cut your finger like that. It really hurt. And so between the finger cut and the eyebrow burn, I'm just lucky to be here today. Okay. I should have called in sick.
Okay, well, I'm right with you on the hand thing. On Friday, we had to get new. I finally got a new chair for the office after 10 years. The old one, I just couldn't sit on anymore. I slid off the front every day. So I bought a new chair, and I was loading it from Staples into the truck. The cardboard was very sharp, and I sliced the palm of my hand on the cardboard.
So, see?
And you know what wrong with the palm of the hand is? You can't put a Band-Aid on your palm of your hand. You just can't. It doesn't stay. So
all of a sudden you've got one of those like arm cradles, you know.
We are just a disaster this weekend, getting hurt everywhere.
And you tell me tornadoes are coming tomorrow. Oh my God. I'm going to Hawaii.
Successfully over the weekend, you're gonna be so proud. You know, I may not be able to deal with horse injuries or thrush or any of that stuff that's gross, but I clipped Scooter over the weekend. I'm a good clipper. Even Jennifer said, you're a really good clipper. I'm a good clipper. I can clip a horse. And, there's something.
Go ahead.
There's just something satisfying about clipping a horse. It's like painting a room. You see your results immediately. You know, there's no delayed gratification when you clip a horse. You see it immediately, and I like that.
I would like to point out two things that make you a good clipper and all the rest of us hate it. Number one is you don't have a bra, because hair will find a way.
You can't go for hours after without taking a shower. You just can't.
And the other thing is I constantly am applying chapstick because that is my life. And I've accepted it. It's just an addiction that I have. And I would apply chapstick and start grooming and clipping. And then I would just be hair face.
I tend to keep my mouth open a lot. And you can't do that either when you're clipping. It's just he had so much hair. And he was getting so hot, you know, because it's 90 degrees here tomorrow. So, and his hair was 3 inches long still. So we clipped him and there was a ton of hair. And I also wanted to report, because I get a lot of complaints. I don't talk about Scooter enough. We're still dealing with his itchy problems and his tail, you know, having the scabs on it, all that stuff. We're still dealing with all of that. 3 vets now, lots of money. Well, she finally talked to Dr. Marcella, who's the doctor that's been on our show a couple times, the dermatologist from the University of Florida. She teaches over there. So we're bringing him next week to the University of Florida for testing. So,
oh my gosh, that sounds cheap.
1,000 plus, she said.
Okay. So have you had him tested like for Cushing's?
Oh yeah, everything. He's had that. He's had everything. He's literally
Is he on
everything.
Pergolide right now?
He just doesn't have Cushing's. So it's just, they just cannot figure it out. So what they're finally going to do for the first time is they're going to do the skin flake tests, and they're actually going to test the skin, which they've never done, all 3 vets. Apparently it's not a thing with horses, they said. So what we're having to do is they're actually bringing him to the small animal clinic. I mean, it's a large animal clinic, but it's a small animal people that are doing the testing. So he's going to be tested for everything, but it's basically from the small animal side, which, by the way, raises the price.
Of course. Yeah. It's insane.
But at least Dr. Marcella is taking it seriously. I think the other vets have too. She's literally tried everything. Even down to everything. So she's been on talking about it, so I'm not going to belabor it. But he is going to the University of Florida next week for his fancy expensive tests. So we'll see if
that'll be great. Good. I'm glad he's going to get some relief, poor little guy.
I know. He is miserable.
Well, does Scooter load well when he's going to go? Does he jump in the trailer?
He jumps right in the trailer. He thinks that's great fun. He loves going places.
You know, like when you see somebody loading a horse and they're in a pickle and they need help.
Yeah, the horse is not having any part of it.
Uh-huh. I stumbled across one of those this weekend and saw this person that could not get this horse in the trailer. And the person was frazzled and the horse was beyond frazzled. And I was like, okay.
And we all know that feeling because we've all been there, right?
Yeah, you've all been there. Everybody's been there. Everybody's done it. But I was like, well, I have to try to help. And I grabbed a dually halter and brought it. And I keep one in my car, of course. Why wouldn't I? So I put the dually halter on the horse. And the horse was just, by the point of me getting there, was so frazzled. And they were trying to load this horse into a 2-horse straight load with a ramp. And it's a fairly high trailer and it's not a super big horse. So, but by the time I got there, I was going to have to get creative. And I tried and tried, and it was probably 20 minutes this horse who just was like, shut down, like done. But it worked really good off the dually halter. Like I could get it back and forward really good and would just get up to the trailer and just start running sideways and just freaking out. So I just was like, I don't know what to tell you. And the horse spins around towards me and I start backing it up and I'm backing it towards the trailer. And I was like, let's just keep going. And I backed the horse back. And the horse wouldn't put its hind feet on the ramp. Well, it's got its hind feet on the ramp now because I'm backing it up. And I kept backing it up and it backed up the ramp and into the slot.
No kidding. Backwards. Some people hold their horses that way, looking out the back.
I was like, close the door. So this is not a training backwards? Opportunity. I was like, just close the door. He'll be fine. They like riding like this anyway. And he was little enough to close the ramp and then close the top. And I was like, okay, bye.
I know a lot of people say it's better for the horses to have them riding facing out the back. I don't know.
I've never done that before, but I was, this horse was so frazzled that I was like,
well, at that point, if they're backing in, fine.
I was like, it's fine. You know, it was not time for a training opportunity. You know, like I was like, I'm just trying to help somebody out. So I gave the horse back to the trailer and they were like, I've never seen that before. And I was like, I've never done that before. Oh, I said, God. I have been creative. She was like, have you done anything like that before? And I'm like, yeah, I had a horse who would not go near the trailer. And I ended up long lining it into the trailer. So I have done that long. And that horse loaded perfect after that. So it long lined on and off. It just didn't want to be pulled into the trailer. It had to be, you know, let go and go into the trailer. So anyway, it was funny. So I've never done that before. Interesting way.
I probably will never do it again.
Nope. I almost was like, can somebody take a picture? The horse just standing there like with the butt bar.
What happened?
Across its chest. What the hell?
But worst time we ever had loading a horse was one of the Percherons we bought. We bought it at the Percheron sale in Harrisburg at the Farm Show Arena. And it had been 10 hours of auctioning off these Percherons. And we bought like the second to last one. So it's late in the day. This horse was probably 4 years old and a good 17 and a half, 18 hands already. It was a huge horse. And we horse tried loading it in our two-horse trailer, and this horse was not having any parts of it, and I really don't blame it. But so that took a while, and we're trying to be patient, all this stuff. And finally, this Amish dude walks up. Keep in mind, they don't drive horse trailers, right? So they don't load in horse trailers much. And he said, let me handle that. Just took the horse by the lead rope and literally walked it onto the trailer like we had never tried that for the whole hour and a half we were trying to get this horse on the trailer.
What?
I don't know what it was, but he just took the lead rope. He didn't do anything else. He didn't get, you know, very calm and just walked the horse up onto the trailer. Like, oh, crap. I don't know what he did. It was different than what we were doing. Apparently energy was different or something.
I'm like, did you ask him?
Yeah, he just did. He just walked him up. There was nothing to ask. He just took the lead rope and walked him onto the trailer.
No, he took some of that magic dust and blew it up his nose.
I just think his energy was different. You know how we talk about we were probably frazzled after all that time with this new enormous horse. And he's dealing with these enormous horses all the time and just goes, here we go. Up on the
was it a giant trailer or were you trying to
it
smash
was a thoroughbred sized trailer, but he was the only horse in it. We had taken the divider out, so he had a box stall basically, and he fit just fine. It was just
wow.
I don't know what he had. It's some magic. Amish magic that just walked right up. But anyway, that was the worst trailer loading experience we've ever had. Mostly
that's
Jennifer
fun.
Uses Monty's method for the troubled loaders.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if they lead, they load. So there you go. Now, speaking
or
of
apparently, if they back up, they load.
he led backwards really good. Well, what they didn't have in their trailer is they did not have the worm flooring. I think that's the problem. basically. I should tell them. Yeah. You know, you've been there. You've been there. You open up the trailer after a long haul and it's a total mess between moisture, poop, shifting rubber mats. Your trailer floor is taking a beating. And that's why we use Worm flooring. It's not just a liner. It's a game changer for anyone in the equine or livestock world. And side note, it's so much quieter when they walk across it so they don't get so freaked out. But they use this troweled on rubber material that bonds directly to your floor. On the edges, it kind of goes up a little bit. So like there's nothing getting underneath it and around it. The traction is incredible. Even when wet, ask me how I know, because my barn aisle we had a ton of rain over the last week. You're not going to be sliding around. They don't slide around behind the trailer. You just hose it out. No lifting 100-pound mats ever again. It's the last floor your trailer will ever need. Go to wormflooring.com, WERM flooring.com, to find an installer near you.
Well, our first guest today, I'm so excited about, because I actually got to see his work. We drove by it. We didn't get to stop, but we drove by it in Scotland when we were there. And we have sculptor Andy Scott on, who's best known for the Kelpies in Scotland. You all know it. It's the big 100-foot steel horse heads. You've all seen pictures of it. You all know it. We've talked about it on this show a number of times. And I'm so excited to have Andy here. Hey, Andy.
Hi, good morning. It's an absolute pleasure to chat with you.
So good to have you here. Now, were you a horse guy growing up?
That's a question I'm asked often. No, my background was inner city Glasgow in Scotland, sort of in the 60s and 70s. It was post-industrial and no real connection to horses, although I found out later in life that my great-grandfather was a drayman who worked with Clydesdale horses in the docks of Glasgow. So there was some ancestral lineage with horses, but they really became an artistic passion for me rather than growing up with them and that sort of affiliation. And it's something I'm increasingly, and, you know, it's an ongoing dedication, if you like, in my life and in my art.
You grew up in Glasgow in those years. You're a tough cookie.
It was a tough town. But, you know, I think about it often. And I think that the industrial heritage of that city actually fed in subliminally to me as a developing artist with the heritage of the shipyards and the heavy industry. And I guess that's what took me towards working so much in steel. And the city also had a fantastic history of Victorian and Edwardian statuary in the civic buildings, which really influenced me as a young fella growing up there. So although it was a tough old town, I'm very proud of it and thankful for what it gave me.
It's interesting, too, because weren't the Kelpies kind of the Clydesdale in nature? Isn't that what?
Yes, correct. Yes. The brief for that project was the client who I worked for, which was Scottish Canals, who, as you can tell from the name, look after the country's inland waterways and canal network. They had the title of the Kelpies, but rather than investigating mythological or Scottish folklore avenue of narrative, I took it in a different direction completely, and we decided to go down the route of the heavy horses, the Clydesdales and draft horses, which would have worked the canals and the land and all parts of society back in those days. So, yeah, although it came from a mythical route, I took it very much in a heavy horse direction.
Did they come to you to do this? Did they have this in mind, or was this your idea?
No, this was my idea. They had really not much idea at all. They were buoyed by the success of the Falkirk Wheel, which for your listeners is a huge and a very incredible boat lift lock system nearby in Scotland.
Which, by the way, we drove by too and is absolutely fascinating.
It's a pretty amazing structure. And that had been such a success in terms of canal engineering and tourism that they decided they wanted some sort of an iconic landmark. And as I said earlier, they had that title of the Kelpies, given that it's a water-related equine creature in mythology. But really, I took it in a totally different direction of my own. And I'm pleased to say, after some raised eyebrows, I think it's fair to say, they went with it and we saw it through to what you've seen and what has now become a great success in the country.
Do you only do these in... We're going to talk about some of your later work too, some of your most recent work, but do you only do massive? Did you wake up one day and say, I don't want to do little sculptures. I'm going to do ones that, you know, are 10 stories high.
No. Go big or go home, baby.
Well, it kind of looks like that sometimes. Not at all. Really, it's... They've grown that size over a series of, you know, lucky commissions and interesting appointments with engineers and architects and such like. I do tend, I guess it's difficult because, as I said before we started chatting, I've got my head down and I just concentrate on doing what I do. So I don't really see them as being particularly large or overscale. I just make the things I make, you know, and I make them to suit the environment that the client has in mind. So sometimes, you know, a client will ask for a piece and I say, look, it really does need, because you've got the mountains in the distance there or whatever, it really does need to be a bit bigger than you've envisaged. And I'm pleased to say most clients roll with that. But if you have a look at our website or the Instagram page, you'll see that there's a lot of, you know, small desktop size bronze studies and such like that have eventually grown into much bigger pieces. The steel, I have to say one thing, though, that the steel technique does kind of lend itself to larger scale just by the sheer physical process and mechanisms of building the sculptures.
Okay, so I have to ask you about that. For anybody, you can look up pictures of this, too. So on the Kelpies, I read there was 928 steel plates weighing a total of, basically each head weighs about 300 tons. Yeah. And then it looks like rivets, like these large rivets. Is it riveted? Are those actually rivets or are those decoration?
That's a system, and they are technically called huck bolts. H-U-C-K, huck bolts, and they are, I guess you could say they're a type of rivet. They're essentially a bolting system that requires a great deal of tension to make it work. There's inside those sculptures is a huge tubular steel frame, which has thousands of projecting spigots, and the steel plates of the skin were tensioned onto those spigots and then attached using those huck bolts. So I guess it's kind of similar to a rivet, but actually a mechanical fixing, which is screwed on. And it does give it that riveted appearance, which is a kind of a lovely, I think, a lovely sort of industrial aesthetic reminiscent of the old ships and liners that were once built in Glasgow.
That's what I thought of too, actually, having watched several shows about old ships. And then, Jamie, get this. So you did all the steel plates and everything away, obviously not on location. Is it true that I read that after you brought all the parts together, it only took you 90 days to build them?
Well, yeah, it was only 90 days. And I have to say one thing, though, I can't claim credit to all of that. We worked with the most amazing engineering, structural engineering practice and a fabrication company called SH Structures, who were based in Yorkshire in England. And by the time we got to construction, my job had shifted to what I might perhaps call it as a creative director rather than sculptor, because a project at 100 feet and 300 tons would be far beyond my capacity and my little studio. Although my studio is quite big, actually, but nowhere near the size that was required for them. So it was very much a team effort, and the guys did an incredible job, and it was a joy to work with them over the period. And yeah, 90 days, it's amazing. I have to tell you, though, we were blessed with very good weather that summer. And if you've been to Scotland, you know that really is a blessing.
So, you get one good day a week, you're lucky.
Correct. Yeah. We're not blessed with much sunshine. It's a wonderful country, but the sunshine's not part of it. But that year, I'm pleased to say that year, the guys were very lucky with the weather, which did speed things up. So the assembly took 90 days. Although, again, beforehand, there was considerable amount of work done in the foundations and the civil engineering to take the structure. So it was a very complex project which involved hundreds of people.
Jamie and I, we go to the zoning commission and we can't get permission to put a porch on the house. You said, hey, I'm going to build these things that are 100 feet tall that you're going to see for miles. And they were like, okay. Or did they give you trouble at the beginning?
They didn't give us trouble. Interestingly, one of the people that we had to pay most attention to was the police, the highway, I guess you would call them the highway department, the highway police. They had to be consulted and they had to be happy with what we were proposing.
Because you can see them from a major highway. I can see they were worried about accidents, weren't they?
Correct. You can. Yeah. But because of the position and the long sight line on the approach on that M9 highway as you approach them, they said there was absolutely, they had no problem at all. There were, of course, many statutory obligations in terms of paperwork and permits and all the rest of it. But I'm pleased to say we had a tremendous client group who navigated all of that officialdom particularly well. And very importantly, we also had the buy-in of the local people. We underwent a very long and protracted and very worthwhile consultation with the local population, And they were 100% behind the project from the very outset, and it's had a transformative impact on the local area there. But yeah, I'm pleased to say, though, I'll be honest with you, I was one step away from all the paperwork because it would have driven me crazy, I can tell you.
I get that.
Yeah, you're kind of busy the yeah, whole
exactly,
time.
Exactly.
I have owned Percherons, although not nearly as big as the sculpture you just finished. I had large Percherons, too. I had very big ones. But you just finished a 15-foot, 5,000-pound steel Percheron, which I'll put a picture of in the show notes. It's absolutely amazing. It looks exactly like a Percheron. What was that for?
Well, that lovely commission came to us through a company, a property development company in Colorado Springs called Norwood Developments. And they had the idea for a new subdivision of housing that was being developed on the edge of town, on the edge of Colorado Springs. And in their research, they found that the land had at one time been owned by a lady called Ruth Banning. And Ruth Banning, back in the 1920s, was quite the entrepreneur, which was, as you can imagine, quite challenging for a lady back in those days. And she had a very successful business of moving coal and ice around the Colorado Springs area. And to do so, she had been importing Percheron horses and became quite a renowned breeder and authority on the Percheron breed there in Colorado. And when I heard of this, when the Norwood people got in touch, I straight away said, well, there's your answer. That's what the sculpture should be. Let's do a Percheron as a tribute to Ruth Banning and the breed and the influence and impact that it had on the area. And yeah, the folks there loved the idea. I did the quick sketch in a matter of minutes, to be honest with you, showed it to them, and they loved it, and we were off and running. So it was a lovely project to be involved in.
And that also made a metal, right?
It is. It's steel. It's galvanized steel. And galvanizing is a process where normal mild carbon steel is dipped in zinc, and the zinc gives it a weatherproof coating. And the way that I work, often it's a better process than welding stainless steel for a number of reasons. But yeah, it's steel, and it has a beautiful metallic silvery gray color to it, which, as I'm sure you know, matches the color of some Percherons in your life.
Yeah.
It's bedded in very well. Again, I have to say, a fantastic team effort. The landscapers, the guys who did the surrounding environment, the plinth, and the adjacent stonework around the sculpture did a gorgeous job. It looks really, really well in the setting. And I just saw some photographs of it the other day with some snow, which sets it off even more beautifully.
Wow. Yeah, it kind of looks the same type of, for those who aren't seeing it right now, imagine the Kelpies and that kind of same metal formed into the giant Percheron. And that was my question, is like, how do you clean these things? Like, water's got to be going in those holes, I guess. Yeah. But you're saying that it doesn't tarnish.
No, it doesn't tarnish. The steel looks after itself. Basically, the basic maintenance advice is give it a power wash every now and then. You know, like, if it looks a bit grubby, give it a wash, much as the same as you would do with your car or anything
Percheron.
Else. You
know? Same as we do our Percherons, right?
Yeah, they're very, very low maintenance. And it's an interesting point you make, because, you know, when folks invest sometimes not inconsiderable sums of money on a beautiful piece of public art, they want it to keep looking good. And we have to be cognizant of that from the outset. And rather than giving them a challenge to look after the sculpture, we want to make it as easy as possible. So galvanized steel really fits the bill in that regard. And it still looks magnificent after one winter over there in Colorado. I'm sure it'll be good for many decades to come.
So I want to talk about a gallery presentation that's happening right now in California. But before I do that, when you were growing up as a kid in Glasgow, what did you want to be?
I wanted to be an artist from the very outset. I'll be honest with you. I was always drawing and building things as a little kid. And then I was lucky enough to go to very good high school and a special art courses as a kid, as a teenager. To be honest, I also did apply for architecture. I was perhaps influenced, as I said earlier on, by my own home city there. But luckily for the world of architecture, I'm not very good at math or physics. So I found my way into the art world. So no regrets. But yeah, I always wanted to be an artist.
Yeah, but there's still a level of architecture associated with your art. So.
Well observed. There is. Yeah, thank you. There is a degree of architecture and engineering in the way that they're put together. And we always work very closely with structural engineers to certify all the artworks before they're put out into the public realm. But my wife, Hanneke, who also sort of manages the business side of things here, she's an architect. She's Dutch and she's an architect. So she has a very sympathetic sensibility in terms of aesthetics and an understanding of the built environment that really helps the practice.
Well done. You couldn't do it. So you married one. I mean, that's working it out right there. You're well right, done.
That was on absolutely. The want ad. Needed.
Yeah. Absolutely. Listen, Sandy, I'll tell you, Hanneke's the boss of this show.
Is there a sculpture you've always wanted to do and you just haven't yet?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I have sketchbooks full of ideas which were never able to find fruition. You know, sometimes a client for whatever reason drifts off or, you know, things outside our control happen. So I've got plenty of ideas that never came to life. I have one very recent idea that we proposed for a statue of, it's going to sound a bit strange and surreal, but if you can imagine a centaur, a Clydesdale horse centaur with kettle drums. And I was kind of inspired by the notion of those beautiful big Clydesdales being used for military parades and the idea of Greek mythology. And I pulled it all together into a lovely little bronze study. And one day I would love to see that one come to fruition as a large scale sculpture.
So would I.
Yeah, I think it would be absolutely magnificent at full size. I'm thinking maybe 20 feet. We actually had a military veterans charity in mind for it back over in the UK. But sadly, it didn't fit with the financial planning, so it's kind of on ice. There's another project in the offing, which we had a run at a while ago for a Frisian horse in the Netherlands, and that one would also have been up to about 100 feet or 30 meters in Friesland near Leeuwarden, and we're very excited that just in the last month or so, our colleagues over there in Friesland have been back in touch to say that there's a renewed energy and interest in the project. So that would be an amazing one to do. I'm sure you're both familiar with Frisians.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can't go to the movies today. Every horse in a movie, we joke about it all the time, is a Frisian, right? So
it certainly does seem that way. And with my wife, Hanneke, being Dutch, and we've been many times to visit Frisian stables and events, and they're absolutely magnificent animals. So we have our fingers crossed that that one will also come to fruition in due course. But yeah, look, as I said earlier, I just keep my head down and concentrate on the jobs that do come to the studio. And, you know, you keep your fingers crossed for the other ones and you know, life rolls on. So
I would like a big giant centaur in my front yard. So I'm going to call you later.
Okay, you're on. Fantastic. I look forward to that.
After Harry Potter, centaurs became popular again after the Harry Potter books.
We gave this centaur, well, you'll see, it's actually included in the VIFA gallery exhibition.
Yeah, talk about that. Tell us about
that. Sure, yeah. So that particular bronze study is in this show with the VIFA Gallery, which is in Torrance down near Palos Verdes in Los Angeles, so South LA. And they're a new gallery, just set up about a year and a half ago. Through mutual friends, we were connected, and they asked if we would like to have an exhibition with them. Now, you might find this is a bit strange, but in my entire career, I've only had one other gallery exhibition.
They didn't fit in the building. That was part of the problem.
And I think also when you become known for doing larger pieces, people don't expect that you would be interested
in
gallery-sized bronzes and such like. But over the years, we have accumulated a number of bronze studies and maquettes and such like. So when VIFA started, the Anderson family who run the VIFA gallery, when they started discussing, Hanneke and I thought, you know, we could pull together those little studies. We could put together a photographic record of some of the bigger projects, including the Percheron and including the Kelpies and such like. So the show's on. It's fantastic. I was there yesterday giving us a little presentation to the folks from the Autry Museum here in LA. And it was a wonderful afternoon with like-minded horse lovers and art lovers, and the show's going very well. We're delighted to have been able to participate.
And I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well, so that everybody, we have a lot of listeners in California.
Fantastic. Hopefully
they can. I have a quick question, though. Like, so, okay, you've done the Kelpies, you've done these big Percherons. I'm looking at the VIFA gallery right now, and everything is horse. So with all of that, are you riding yet?
That's a very good question. Well, as you can probably see from all of those images you're looking at, I'm so busy I barely have time to walk the dog. So unfortunately, no, I've only had the joy of being on horseback a few times in my life. And I know that sounds strange, but honestly, without meaning to sound like a martyr for my cause, I am literally in the studio 7 days a week or 6 days a week. And my time is so limited that I've never really had the joy of giving it as much time as I would like. I'm hopeful that as I get older and maybe I can't be scampering up and down the scaffolding with quite the same vigour, I can free up some time to get on horseback. But as I said, they're more of an artistic passion for me, and I've grown so fond of the various breeds I've worked with over the years and met such wonderful people in the equine world. I'm happy for now to be on ground level looking up at these magnificent animals.
So, you know, we do appreciate you joining us today. This has been absolutely fascinating. And as I said, on this show over the last 15 years, we've talked about the Kelpie several times and the story behind him and all of that. So to get to chat with you just makes our day. We really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. And, you know, keep an eye on us. I'm sure there'll be some more interest in equine works coming up in the future. It'll be lovely to chat with you again sometime.
Definitely. Anytime. AndyScottSculpture.com is where Sculptor.com is where you can find all of his work. There's more than just horses. Go check it out. I love some of the bird ones you've done are absolutely fascinating as well. So not just horses, they're all there. And if you want to go to the gallery, it's the VIFA Gallery in Torrance, California. And I'll put a link directly to that in the show notes as well. Thanks a bunch. We appreciate it, Andy.
Wonderful. Thank you, Andy. Very much. Thank you. All the best. Bye-bye.
Whether you're hauling to a show, heading to a clinic, or just clocking highway miles, fuel costs add up fast. U.S. Rider diesel savings, powered by open roads, can save you up to 50 cents per gallon at thousands of gas stations across the country. High mileage drivers could save more than $700 a year. It's free to join, and as a gift from U.S. Rider, you'll get free priority processing when you sign up. Head to myopenroads.com/USRider to start saving today.
Well, coming up next, we have our friend and boss, Ashley, on here to talk to us about something she would like everybody to participate in. Hi, Ashley.
I have a question for her first, though, because I've got to clear this out because I just scratched my eye and like it hurt. Ashley, have you ever been burned while getting your eyebrows waxed?
Oh, God. No.
They've never put like too hot away.
I'll be honest. I haven't gotten my eyebrows waxed since high school.
Okay. I hate
apparently
you so
you're
much.
The only one still doing it.
I am not. If I don't, I'll only have one. I need to have two to look normal.
I mean, Frida Kahlo really rocked that one.
I am not trying to be her, although I would very clearly do it. So, yes. So, never mind. I don't want to talk to you. Bye.
Okay. Bye, Jamie.
I didn't even know that was a thing till this conversation.
Oh. Well, I just rubbed my eye and it hurt. I'm like, oh, I forgot I was burned.
Oh, maybe don't go there anymore.
Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Hey, you know, I'm just your boss out here trying to take care of you.
I'm going to have to put in for workers' comp.
Gosh, yes, please.
So since you say you're my boss, you're going to have to do some paperwork.
Oh, I can't wait to take that to my HR friend.
You know, you could, Jamie, if we were doing video, then you could claim workers' comp, right?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Forget it. Never mind.
Ashley, what are we talking about?
All right. So it is that time of every 2 years where we ask our listeners to help us shape the future of Horse Radio Network. So we have a survey out that takes about 10 minutes. And I know 10 minutes is a long time. So thank you for the about 100 or so people who have already participated. We really appreciate it. There's some really cool prizes out there. So at the end of the survey, if you drop your email, you will be entered to win a year U.S. Rider protection subscription, a year of Practical Horseman Plus, which is our new SVOD program that I know Marla, my boss, was on the show recently talking about. We have fly predators and
Glenn, am I missing anything else, or is that?
Those are worth it. Between U.S. Rider and Fly Predators, you're talking about $600 worth right there.
I feel like there might be even more. Probably there's more. I'll be honest with you guys. I got some really good prices this year. So, you know, if you could take that 10 minutes out of your time, there's questions in there about you, your horses. And then there's also questions about our shows. What do you like? What don't you like? What content gaps do you see? You know, I can't promise you we can do a show about aliens riding on the moon, but we can try.
We probably could, actually.
Somebody actually write that? No. I don't think so.
No. We could ask AI for help on that one, probably. We could even get pictures, I'm sure.
I bet. Thinking of the survey, I took it, actually, too, if that's okay. But I took it because, like, who doesn't want to talk about their horses and their farm and their selves? So, like, it wasn't bad at all.
Oh, I'm glad, Jamie. And, you know, this really helps us to nail down great sponsors that keep all the shows that you guys love going. So this really helps the future of HRN. This helps with the money HRN can make, and it helps us know who you guys are better so that we can make content that you love.
They like to tell us what they like and don't like anyway. Might as well do it in like an official form.
It's true. And, you know, Jen always, she'll send me all of her hate mail, and I include that in the executive summary. No, I'm just kidding, guys.
Oh, thanks. That's great.
Just kidding.
You've been posting these also in the auditor room, and it's been really interesting reading the comments. And we've done this. This is probably our fifth time we've done it. And it's been also interesting for Jamie and I, because we've done these over a period of 10, 12 years, to see the differences of the changes. And what we found is they mostly haven't changed over the last 10 or 12 years. The answers have been very similar, except for the ones that relate to podcasting, how they listen and things like that have changed over time. Because, you know, we were all using ancient cell phones when we first
internet.
My son found my old iPod Nano the other day in my office, and he was fascinated by it. And I was like, you don't even know what that is, kid. I used to have to plug that into my computer and download podcasts.
That's it.
Oh yeah.
I still have mine here somewhere.
When you would download one and it sucked, you're like, oh, all that time I wasted, you know.
And not to forget how long it took to download stuff back then. It's like 30 minutes later, I got my podcast onto my player, and it only fit one.
Yeah. I know. Oh, the times, they are changing. Yes. And so today we're going to include the link to the listener survey in those show notes. If you can go fill that out, we would super appreciate it. And like I said, we have tons of really cool prizes available for, you know, the few winners of the survey. And Glenn, before I go, I thought we would officially announce that you are up for the American Horse Publications Visionary Award. And we are so proud of you.
I got to say, I was kind of surprised. I think this is the second time I've been up for this award. I might reach Monty's level soon.
How many times? You're like the Susan Lucci of the AHP conference.
So this award is given by the American Horse Publications, and it's kind of like the Lifetime Achievement Award would be at the Oscars, right? That's what it's...
That's generous.
It's kind of a Lifetime Achievement Award rather than you did one thing.
Yeah, but I'm in. Yeah. You're a visionary.
I am really flattered. I know that some of you, I don't know who, put me in and worked on this. I know it was Lisa Wysocki did it a couple years ago. By the way, a couple years ago, I was beat out by the Pony Club. So, you know.
I mean, I would think, you know, all those little girls in pigtails are who beat you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Don't take it too personal.
I was kind of outranked there. But then again, this year, I got some serious competition this year, and they all deserve to win more than me.
Who is it?
Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends.
Oh, wow.
So he's on that list. Lynn Coakley, by the way, they've all been guests on our show, by the way. Lynn Coakley is the founder of the Equus Foundation. So we've had her on before. Roxanne Durant, she's the co-founder of the IEA, which is a high school version of the what is the college
horse
one?
Shows.
Yeah, the college one. So this is high school teams competing against each other. And then myself. So there's all those important people, and then me.
You're shoo-in one.
We love you, and you definitely deserve to be on that list, if not at that podium, friend.
I thought it was really strange. I think somebody on this call knew about this ahead of time, because I thought it was really strange that Ashley announced to me, hey, I'm going to go to AHP conference in May in Kentucky for the first time this year. And I'm like, she has never gone to one of these before. So I found that a little strange.
You know,
so are you going to go, Glenn?
Yeah, I'm going. I'm going to speaking this year, so I'm going anyway. You know,
I think I'm really going because Lisa's movie is going to be filmed.
Yeah, we're all getting in on being in the movie. Yes, that's true.
So there's that, and you know, I can't confirm or deny. I've been sworn to secrecy by the Illuminati, so I can't say anything more on the matter as a professional journalist.
Well, we'll all find out in May who got that. And you know what was interesting is that we have interviewed all these people on our shows, so that's kind of cool too. And I did find out there were 19 entries, and the four that made it through the cut. And Monty, we were joking earlier, for those that don't know, Monty's been on this list as a finalist about, what, 25 times over the years? he's the Susan Lucci right now.
Right. You're catching up.
I'll be there shortly. Thank you, Ashley.
Cheers, guys.
You know, it is nice having a cool boss like Ashley. She's a cool boss. And it's kind of weird having a boss that you hired. So I hired her. Now she's my boss, which is kind of weird, too.
You hired me. You were my boss. And now you're nothing.
Now I'm nothing. Like now we're just coworkers. So there was a question in the auditor room. I'm not going to say the person's name because it doesn't matter. But I thought it was interesting because it's a dilemma I think every horse person comes across at some point in their life. And for many different reasons, for a multitude of different reasons, you come across this. And she says, what's wrong with me? Why can I not ride my horse every day? I own my own farm. The horses are outside, yet I cannot motivate myself to ride every day. I used to every single day, no matter the weather, I would be happy to ride, and now I just can't. I still love it. It's the only thing that brings me endless happiness, but I cannot get motivated to actually hop on. Well, the first thing is, I don't know where this thing that we have to ride our horses every day came from. I think it's the feeling of guilt, and I've had it too over the years, not driving my horse as much because I was working or, you know, whatever. You do feel guilty when not using them as much as you should. Yeah, I don't know that the horse really cares, but I guess some horses might. I don't know. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, I've certainly gone through this, and actually just very recently, because, you know, I love training horses and my job is to go down to the barn to ride, but I was having my own horses and I would get the work done and then just kind of run out of gas for the other ones. And to be fair, like now I have less horses in training. I should be riding my horse more, but you know, Ace is half leased out. And usually what makes me excited to ride is to have somebody to do it with. I know that sounds weird, but I mean, riding by yourself sometimes can get a little lonely and you get stuck.
And that's
why
people like boarding stables, right? The main reason people give in surveys for being at a boarding stable is for community.
Yeah. And so to not have, you know, honestly, I'm probably morning farm boy a little bit. Like I've been morning farm boy because I had it like a buddy for years and now he's gone. And so I'm definitely, yeah. So
you should put an ad up at the college. Farm boy needed.
Yeah. Right. Well, I got, you know, Zoe comes out and she half leases Ace, but then I didn't have anybody else to ride with her. You know, so she's riding my horse and I'm like, this is fun watching you ride. And then I'm by myself the rest of the week. So, you know, I actually had to find some motivation, which is why I bought the Buckskin Andalusian. I told Chad, I'm like, I want to go down to the barn and have a horse that I'm so excited to ride. You know, like Ace is great. My thoroughbred, I got him as a 3-year-old. Now he's jumpy. He does all the things now, which is fine. And it's great. I mean, he canters from a halt. Like he's so trained now. It's fantastic. But I haven't had something that I get down there and I'm like, ooh, I can't wait to ride him. So that's why I bought the horse that I did. And I'm just madly in love with him. And it's like, it's renewed my sense of excitement for riding my own horses. Now, to be fair, I haven't ridden him yet. He was castrated. He's still a monster, but I will eventually ride him again. I need motivation. The other thing that helps me is if I set a goal, like just even a little local horse trials, where it's like, you know, they have them twice a year up the street, and I get really into training for that and prepping for that. So number one, having a horse that I'm excited to ride, and number two, having a goal of something to look forward to and to train for, and number three, having somebody around. So those three things are kind of my where I'm at probably in my current life.
And I think when you have your own barn, the first thing you said is happens. That's the most common thing that happens. You're spending so much time taking care of the horses that by the time you get done just doing the normal stuff of taking care of the horses, you're tired. I mean, you're just like, that probably is the number one reason that people don't have the time, quote unquote, to ride their own horse.
See, it's funny. I'm backwards. I'm like, I mean, they get fed and everything, but I won't clean a thing till I'm done riding everybody.
Yeah, but you don't have that. A lot of these people are doing 9-to-5 jobs, getting home at 6 at night. By the time they take care of the horses, it's 8:30, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's a little different. But your job is riding horses, which probably is another reason that, you know, at the end of riding 4 horses, do you really want to ride your own for fun? You know, so
I know. Yeah. That's why I wanted to get something that I did want to ride for fun.
You know, when I used to be feeling guilty about this, and it is guilt, I think, part of it, about not driving my pony. Jennifer used to tell me, drive your pony when you want to, not when you feel you have to. It's supposed to be fun. And I think that that helped me take the guilt away, that when I did it because I wanted to and it was fun that day. You know, not because I had to and I was just doing it because I have to. Because then I don't think it's as fun.
Well, and you're not training for something where, like, you have to, you know, it's not like you're all of a sudden going to go run cross country and your horse isn't fit because you haven't been riding it and you're going to get injured. You know, like, you were like, you're doing this because you love it. And 80%
of our listeners are trail riders. So, you know, they're not doing it for that reason either, which probably makes it harder to have that goal, right? That thing I'm working towards.
In that situation, I would say just do something to make you happy. But there's definitely days where I'm like, Sunday morning, I was like, I don't feel like doing anything. And I'm like, let's get up, let's go. Got to do stuff. Come on. So I'm kind of tough on myself too, for sure. And I've definitely said, what is wrong with me? I have this amazing farm. Why don't I want to get on a ride? You know what? I got to find ways to get excited.
Well, and I think it's true of anything in life too. Whatever you're doing, hiking or riding bike or whatever it is, there are times when you don't feel like doing it. And then when you get there and are actually doing it, you're glad you did.
You know, it's like my career as a marathoner. It's like I just couldn't motivate myself to run ever. So it was very short lived. It was like non-existent. It's like it didn't even count.
So I don't know. I don't know. I think there's a myriad of reasons. I think that, again, it comes back to, does my pony care? Probably not. You know, he likes when I fuss with him and he likes when I take him for a hand walk. You know, he's just as happy with that. Probably prefers it over pulling the cart, right?
Just keep him healthy and happy. And I'm really offended at how you immediately laughed when I mentioned my marathon career. Like, you didn't even take a breath. Like,
I have never seen you run 5 steps in your life.
That's because if I'm running, you should run too, because something's chasing me.
I don't think any of us have to worry about that. All right.
Just motivation. That's all I need.
Let's close this show out. We have a full week of shows planned for you this week. Endurance tomorrow. So tune in for that. Get your weird news in to weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com for Wednesday's show. We appreciate you joining us then. Hold on for the Auditor Post Show. We're going to play the game, Who is More Likely To?
Oh, Lord.
We'll do that in the post show. See you, everybody.
All right. Spend your geld.